of our time and efforts as Sudanese people to keep focusing on RSF and SAF and their leaders. It is not news that the paramilitary forces, the rapid support forces that were created by the Sudanese government to commit the genocide of Darfur, that they're continuing to commit that in different regions of the country. That is not news. And it is not news that the SAF, the army that was established by the colonial forces, continues to be aligned to other forces. It's not even
Marine,
clear.
We
right
just
now.
Have 30 seconds. What do you think needs to happen?
I think what needs to happen is for the international community to pay attention to the Sudanese people and not the two warring parties. It is important to understand that what matters now is for people to eat, for people to live safely, and that is not going to happen through the work and effort of the same ones who are killing us and causing us to starve.
Maureen Al-Neil, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Sudanese activists joining us from Nairobi, Kenya. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable team of people. I thank everyone. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election. We want to know, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Fill out our survey by August 14th, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card. Full rules on our website. At the end of August, we'll report back with the community's priorities. Find that survey online at bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024. That's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, wildfire smoke and heat prompt a warning about the air we are breathing. Firefighters across Oregon speak out about their battle with more than 1 million acres of land on fire.
The fire season for us, the most intense portion of our season, is just beginning.
And in the Northwest, most people are saying their health care costs are just too high. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, August 8th, 2024. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. An air quality advisory due to smog is now lifted for the Portland and Vancouver metro area and Marion County. But even though there are no longer ozone pollution warnings, there is still an air quality advisory in effect for wildfire smoke that will last until at least tomorrow afternoon for Salem, Portland, and Vancouver. And some Oregon National Guard members are joining the fight against the wildfires.
CW3 Jeremiah Williams. I'm out of 3 Bravo 351 Aviation Support in Pendleton, Oregon. I am the maintenance test pilot and production control officer. We're just outside of Cottage Grove, Oregon, fighting fires on the Oak Ridge Lane 1 complex. We've been on station here for 3 days. We've flown 2 of the 3 so far. We're anticipating to fly again doing water bucket operations in support of wildland firefighting. The Oregon National Guard brings a special set of skills and the ability to bring Type 1 aircraft out to assist in firefighting operations when the civilian assets are all being utilized at other fires in other states. We run a 1,500-gallon or a 2,000-gallon water bucket. We can put a lot of water on the fire real quick. It's a real privilege to be able to be out here to support the community, to help out the local neighborhoods and save structures across the state. We do a lot of interviews every day out here. We have a lot of people that come to Helibase, locals that come, and we're able to give them tours of the aircraft and show them what we do to help the communities in the state. And it's just a real privilege to be out here to help and to support the Oregon National Guard and the state's mission.
And Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden met with some of Oregon's firefighting leaders and planners about what's shaping up to be a record wildfire season. Here's part of that discussion.
I've been following everything. I just got back from D.C. in the middle of the night just want to know what we ought to be doing to be of help to you. We've been trying to get as many resources as we can for thinning and dealing with that dead and dying material out there that is such a big factor in creating all these fires, particularly when somebody is just careless and all of a sudden you got an inferno on your hands. You're working around the clock. I think most of you must be being fed intravenously right now because you're just working so hard and we appreciate it.
Senator, this is Eric Watrud on the Umatilla National Forest based out of Pendleton, and really do appreciate the support that you provided, and so grateful for having so many wonderful neighbors in the Blue Mountains. The interagency approach between the federal, state, county agencies has just been phenomenal. We've invested heavily in those relationships over the years, and that has paid off wonderfully. It helps to keep our communities and firefighters safe and really helps during these times when resources are really stretched to be able to share and support each other, whether that's initial attack on new starts or continuing with longer term incidents. The other thing that I just like to highlight, and you talked about resources for treating the landscape, whether that's collaborative forest landscape restoration program or just general fuels treatments that we've had. Working with Oregon Department of Forestry and BLM on cross-boundary projects has been very important for the Umatilla National Forest, and it made my heart sing at a recent in-briefing with a team from Washington when their fire behavior analyst, who is not from this area, highlighted that he noted changes in the fire's behavior in areas that had been treated with thinnings or prescribed fires, and the ability for the team to operate safely and be able to establish effective lines in those spots that had been treated. So thank you for your support now during emergencies and also in the preseasons.
We'll keep pushing prescribed burns hard. We've got extra bipartisan support on it now, so I think we'll have some additional help for that when the Congress comes back. We're still a long way from the end of the fire season. And one of the aspects of what's happened over the years is it used to be when we were able to contain fires, because there were smaller fires, you didn't have so many fires simultaneously. What I'm worried about now is we're going to have fires all over the West simultaneously. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are in terms of how serious that is and what we ought to be doing to get you ready for that possibility. When the president was here last, President Biden, he asked me about the fires. President, I go to bed so many nights worried that we're going to have fires all over the West simultaneously, and that's going to be tough to deal with. So what do you see coming up that looks like the projections for what we may be dealing with?
Senator, this is Shane DeForest, Vail District, Bureau of Land Management. Obviously, you're totally correct. The fire season for us out here in southeastern Oregon is the most intense portion of our season is just beginning. The month of August is always the time where we get the most number of fires, where we burn the most acreage. It corresponds to the warmest part of the summer season. Nationally, it's also the same time where a lot of fires are going on all over the place. For us, and the outlook for that we have this year, so up to at this point in time, for our 10-year average number of fire acres burned, we have quadrupled the number of acres burned in our Vail BLM district compared to the 10-year average, with the month of August yet to be. Our outlook is hopeful, but we anticipate there's going to be some more fires, potentially some additional mega fire type situations happening. I think one of the biggest challenges that we're facing here is just being able to communicate with our public related to the nature of the conditions that we have between fuels, the weather, and the fire behavior that results from those two things combining together. When the fires are doing what they're doing, they're going 5 miles in 2 hours or something like that, there's not a lot of anything that can be put in front of it for firefighter safety reasons. And even if you had all the resources in the world, you just can't put them in there. And so helping us to communicate with the public related to the limitations that there are when the weather and the fire behavior is as it has been would be a humongous help for us.
A survey shows 90% of people in the Northwest are concerned about their health care costs. Eric Tegedop has the story.
Washingtonians are worried about the rising costs of health care, in some cases even avoiding treatment because of the price tag. The survey found 57% of respondents didn't seek medical treatment or modified their prescription drug use in the last year because of cost. One in three Washingtonians reported living in a household with medical debt. Sam Hatzenbieler is with the Economic Opportunity Institute, which is part of the coalition that commissioned the survey.
The survey results are very alarming. More than half of respondents said that they were forced to use money from their food, heat, and housing budgets to deplete all or most of their savings or struggle to pay for basic necessities in order to pay for health care.
63% of respondents said they couldn't pay or would struggle to pay an unexpected medical bill of $500. The survey found Black and Latino communities faced greater struggles than white communities when paying health care costs. The nonprofit group Fair Health Prices Washington teamed up with the national organization United States of Care for the survey. Bill Kramer is the senior health policy advisor for the Purchaser Business Group on Health. He says consolidation in the industry has left people and businesses with little bargaining leverage. He says this is a big issue for small businesses.
These high prices and rapid premium increases have caused problems of slower business growth, lower business investment. It's harder to recruit and retain employees. It crowds out wages, and many small businesses simply can't afford to offer health benefits.
Last week, the Office of the Insurance Commissioner released a report analyzing five policies that could help the state rein in health care costs. Hatzenbieler says these policies could be a roadmap for lawmakers next session. She also notes that 87% of Washingtonians, across party lines, want lawmakers to take action.
It's time for policymakers to engage with ideas that could really make a difference for people's pocketbooks.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Washington will soon elect a new governor, as longtime Governor Jay Inslee is not seeking re-election in November. This week, primary voters selected from 28 candidates on the ballot. The leading vote-getter at 48% of the ballots is current State Attorney General Bob Ferguson. The day after the primary election, some leaders weighed in on their thoughts about what's important in November's election.
I'm Jennifer Allen, the CEO of Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates. I've known for a long time that Bob Ferguson is a true champion of reproductive health and abortion access, as well as a wide range of equality and equity issues that impact Planned Parenthood patients' lives. It looks like voters know it too. They can see by Bob's actions as Attorney General that he doesn't just talk, he takes action to protect reproductive rights in Washington. Thank goodness we can vote for someone who will stand up for us as our governor, and excited to pass it along now to Representative Monica Stonier.
When I'm not serving as a legislator, I'm a teacher, and a lot of my focus in the legislature is on our schools. Strong public schools are critical to our student success and to strengthening our middle class in this state. They help prepare our students for successful futures. And teachers know that every student needs and deserves to be treated like an individual, not a number. And we need a governor who will back us up. And that's just one of the reasons why I'm supporting Bob. As governor, I know he's going to protect public school funding. I know he will maintain teacher salaries that lift up our students on the margins. And with Bob in office, the legislature can actually take more action and ensure that schools have enough resources for educators and for staff, including our nurses, counselors, social workers, in the face of our youth who are facing mental health challenges currently. As teachers, we know we can't teach kids whose basic needs are not yet met. Now I'm gonna hand it over to my friend and colleague, Emily Alvarado, representative in the House and an advocate for our housing issues, vice chair on the housing committee. Emily?
Everyone in Washington needs a home they can afford, but we don't have enough affordable homes in Washington. Rents are rising, and it's challenging for families to buy their first home. I'm supporting Bob Ferguson because he understands we need real, bold solutions to fix the high cost of housing. Bob's housing plan calls for putting Washington on a path to build over 1 million homes over the next 20 years. He has a vision where all sectors come together, private, nonprofit, public, to build more homes and communities across the state. That means investments in affordable housing for seniors, for people with disabilities, for working families. It means reform to help build more homes by transit, more middle housing, more ADUs, lowering barriers to affordable homeownership for essential workers like first responders, nurses, and teachers. Bob's plan does this. As we build for our future, we need relief for families from skyrocketing housing costs now. Rising rents are putting a record number of seniors at risk of homelessness. Bob supports strengthening protections to improve stability for families and older adults on the brink. The data's clear that housing and services ends homelessness. We need investment in permanent housing with supports and services. We can build off the progress we've made for veterans and youth and young adults. Bob's plan will do that. Bob is going to bring the urgency to the housing crisis that he brought to protecting Washingtonians from civil rights and consumer protection violations. That's the kind of leadership we need to make housing more affordable in Washington. I'll pass it to Leah Misick, who's the Washington Director at the Climate Solutions Action Fund.
We all want clean air, clean water, and to be able to take care of ourselves and our families. And Washington has been leading with a rapidly growing green economy, getting good jobs along the way across the state. A clean energy economy is not just our future, it's part of our present. And it's why climate policy experts like myself support Bob Ferguson. I will hand it over to Renee Hopkins.
I'm here to stress the importance of gun violence prevention as a critical component of public safety. Bob worked to pass laws to combat gun violence, took the Trump administration to court, winning a nationwide victory that blocked the unchecked dissemination of untraceable 3D printed gun files. And he holds local industry responsible when they are not holding up Washington state laws. Bob has not only been a leader in this issue space, he has also been a true partner, which matters just as much. Bob Ferguson prioritizes public safety by enforcing existing laws and keeping firearms out of dangerous hands. And now it's my pleasure to hand it over to Bob.
Thanks to all of our speakers. Really appreciate all your work and on the really critical issues our state is facing, and just really feel our coalition of the individuals and groups who are here, and many others, of course, from all across the state, was also a key reason why we had such a successful night.
That was Washington State Attorney General and candidate for Governor Bob Ferguson. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather. A wildfire smoke advisory is in effect overnight and into tomorrow afternoon. We'll have mostly clear skies down to 63. Tomorrow's weather, partly cloudy and up to 90. Today in history, on this date in 1974, President Richard Nixon announced he would resign. Our quote of the day is from Nixon. A man is not finished when he is defeated. He is finished when he quits. President Biden says he doubts there will be a peaceful transfer of power if former President Trump loses the election. Arab American voters may be re-engaged in Michigan with a Harris-Walz ticket. And an Arizona judge blocks new rules to protect election workers. With more on the stories affecting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
He means what he says. We don't take him seriously. He means it. All the stuff about if we lose, there'll be a bloodbath.
President Joe Biden tells CBS he's not confident there will be peace during the transfer of power should former President Donald Trump lose the election. At an Ohio rally in March, Trump warned of a bloodbath if he's not reelected. Trump says his remarks were about how the election would affect the auto industry. In his first speech as Democratic vice presidential nominee, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz returned to a description of the Republican ticket, which has become a viral meme.
You know it, you feel it. These guys are creepy, and yes, just weird as hell. That's what you see. That's what you see.
Young voters are a group Vice President Kamala Harris hopes to sway in a current Midwestern tour. In Michigan, 100,000 Democrats voted uncommitted in the primary over Biden's Gaza policy. Protest organizer Lexis Zidane says Arab American and progressive voters are frustrated but frightened of a second Trump term.
One of the prime pathways to ensuring that doesn't happen is to, again, respond to the movement's calls of ensuring a ceasefire and not another bomb be dropped in Palestine.
Ceasefire hopes have been set back by Israel strikes that killed high-ranking Hamas and Hezbollah officials. And in fact, the White House is now concerned about revenge attacks and escalation. For his part, Trump has long accused Democrats of anti-Israeli extremism. Previously, he called Harris an anti-Semite, in spite of being married to a Jewish man. And Wednesday, he said Harris is insulting Jews by picking walls over Pennsylvania's Jewish governor, Josh Shapiro.
This is a shocking pick, and I think it's very insulting to Jewish people, and I think it's very insulting to people that want security.
Missouri's first congressional district Democratic voters chose St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell over incumbent Representative Cori Bush. She's now the second high-profile progressive to lose a primary this year for opposing Israel's war in Gaza. Bell, who took in millions from a pro-Israel super PAC, says his opponent was more interested in her squad fame than getting work done.
Progressives should actually make progress. Yeah. And that's what I've done my entire career.
The infusion of outside cash made the race one of the most expensive primary races in House history. An Arizona judge has temporarily blocked new rules designed to protect voters and election workers from harassment, ruling they're not necessary and violate free speech. Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes says he'll appeal.
These folks, they weave the golden thread that holds that fabric of our society together. Without elections and competent election administrators doing these jobs, the whole of our society falls apart.
The ruling comes after years of contention with false claims of vote fraud, inspiring activists to show up at poll sites with guns. I'm Catherine Carley.
Our country is facing public health and climate risks from methane pollution. Eric Galatis reports.
Methane pollution is increasing at the fastest rate in decades, according to a new report, and that's making it harder to turn the tide on climate change and protect public health. Oil and gas operations are the single biggest source of methane pollution. Megan Kemp with Healthy Air and Water Colorado says when operators release methane, they're also releasing other toxins into the air known as volatile organic compounds, or VOCs.
Alongside methane, benzene and other VOCs can worsen asthma and other respiratory diseases. It can even increase the risk of heart attacks and cardiovascular diseases. The risk of cancer can cause immune system damage and even developmental problems in children.
On hot summer days, methane and other VOCs combine with sunlight to create ground-level ozone pollution, which has plagued Colorado's Front Range for years and has led the EPA to charge the state as a severe violator of clean air standards. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association says operators have cut methane and other ozone-related pollution by at least 50% through regulation and new technologies. The report's researchers have called for immediate action to cut methane pollution to slow an accelerating climate crisis. Kemp believes state regulators can do more to limit methane emissions, which are more than 80 times more powerful at trapping heat in the atmosphere than CO2.
So in addition to this ozone formation, it is contributing to the acceleration of extreme heat, increased vector-borne illnesses, decreasing water supply and water quality, and the list goes on.
The U.S. is the leading producer of crude oil, which ramped up with new fracking technologies. The rise in fracking also tracks with the rise in global methane emissions. Kemp says while cutting emissions is critical for a future livable climate, more attention needs to be paid to communities that have long lived in the shadows of refineries and other polluters.
It is in our state statute to minimize adverse impacts from oil and gas for disproportionately impacted communities. And we see time and time again that our regulatory agencies are not stepping up and meeting the mandate.
This is Eric Galatis.
At least one type of crime is trending down in California. Suzanne Potter has the story.
Property crime is near record lows, according to the latest statistics from the California Department of Justice. A new report from the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice finds that property crime is down 53% statewide since 2005 and 16% since 2009, when criminal justice reforms began to take effect. Report author Mike Mayles says people going on TV claiming otherwise are cherry-picking local statistics while ignoring the larger trend.
All these insinuations we're seeing nationwide across the political spectrum and in a lot of media is that California crime is out of control, and it's just not true. Just the opposite is the case.
This fall, Golden State voters will decide on Proposition 36, which would reverse parts of Prop 47, a criminal justice reform bill from 2014. More thefts would be deemed felonies, sending more people to jail by lowering the cutoff on the value of property stolen. It would also classify certain drug offenses as treatment-mandated felonies and increase penalties for some drug crimes. Prop 36 is supported by some law enforcement groups. The largest contributors include Walmart, Target, and Home Depot. Will Matthews is a spokesperson for the nonprofit Californians for Safety and Justice, who says Prop 47 has saved the state $850 million in the cost of incarceration so far and diverted that money to programs that combat the drivers of crime, such as poverty and addiction.
We can't put all of our safety investments into just responding to crime and harm after they occur. We also have to be investing in community-based crime and harm prevention programs.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Libraries are sounding an alarm about what could happen to them under Project 2025. Mark Moran reports.
The Every Library Institute has just released a report that says the Republican Party's conservative agenda, outlined in Project 2025, takes aim at places where students can read, discover, and explore. Conservatives call it a matter of accountability. Montana's public libraries hold almost 4.5 million items, and the State Library Association says people visit an average of 4.5 times during the year. Peter Bromberg with the Every Library Institute says Project 2025, which consists of a 900-page strategy to overhaul the federal government, would take direct aim at libraries and the people who work there.
Librarians and teachers are highly trusted and well-known in their communities. It's really a shocking and extreme attempt to twist our democratic society and our institutions into more of a totalitarian theocracy.
Republicans have said librarians need more accountability for what's on their shelves. A bill in Alabama that would have criminalized librarians for allowing content defined as obscene narrowly missed becoming law this year. A similar measure has already been filed for next session. Bromberg says Project 2025 promotes book bans, restricts LGBTQ content, and undermines the intellectual freedom and inclusivity that libraries are known for. He adds that will ultimately threaten a student's educational quality and could presage the end of libraries serving as open and inclusive spaces for people who want to learn, especially when it comes to book bans.
Americans are increasingly becoming aware of what's happening and organizing, and it doesn't often take very much in terms of organizing and pushback on whether it's school boards or county councils to get the books back on the shelves.
This is Mark Moran.
Native voters and candidates prepare for a critical impact on the 2024 election. A Brewers tailgating event aims to boost Native voter registration numbers. And Netflix drops Rez Ball trailer featuring Echo and Rez Dogs alums. Here's National Native News Today with Brian Bull.
With the 2024 presidential campaign now at full throttle, the weight of the Native vote can play out big, especially in tight races and battleground states with high numbers of Native Americans. So savvy candidates should be wary of stereotypes, tropes, and indifference that can strike the Native electorate as racist or ignorant. Past comments by GOP running mate J.D. Vance show him calling Indigenous Peoples Day a fake holiday, among other inflammatory statements. A few years earlier, Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren stoked ridicule and anger when she claimed Native American ancestry along with a DNA test.
It's really unfortunate, actually. It goes to show the lack of education, the lack of information, and really a lot of the, when we talk about myths and disinformation.
Jenny Parrish is a Diné tribal member and executive director of Arizona Native Vote, a nonpartisan group aimed at driving up Native representation at the polls. She says for candidates navigating Indian country, the words they use and reactions they share on Indigenous issues can show how educated they are on Native people.
If our elected leaders took the time to learn more about constituents and especially about groups like ours that are underrepresented in a lot of governmental structures, it would really benefit them. But alas, that would be in a really good world, in a really different world.
As for politicians who work well with Native Americans, Parrish has a few she can name currently in the U.S. Senate or House.
We have Mark Kelly. We have Ruben Gallego. Tom Cole, who is from Oklahoma, is conservative and Republican, but has served in a lot of essential seats that really has helped elevate Indian country. Another great example is Lisa Murkowski and many folks in Alaska, folks that have taken the time to learn and to visit Indian country.
Parrish says people should register or check their voter registration status through their local county election office, the Secretary of State's office, or online at vote.gov. From the Upper Midwest, Native organizers in Wisconsin are hoping to field new voters with a baseball-themed effort to encourage Native Americans to turn up at the polls this fall. Danielle Kading reports.
The Wisconsin Native Vote Initiative hopes to draw more than 1,000 people from the state's 11 tribes to a baseball tailgate next month. The event will be held August 15th before a Milwaukee Brewers game against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Anne Egan-Wakow is an urban organizer with the initiative in Milwaukee. She's also a member of the Menominee Indian Tribe. Egan-Wakow says it's a way to bring communities together while urging them to vote.
Let our people know their voices are heard, that they remember to vote, that they register to vote for the seventh generation, and that means to vote for all generations in the future.
She says they want tribal residents to make their voices heard on issues like health care and environmental protection. Native Americans make up 1% of Wisconsin's population. Organizers want voters to know their vote matters, especially as past presidential elections in the state have been decided by slim margins. I'm Danielle Kading.
And if baseball isn't your thing, how about resball?
I'm not about to give up on the season.
A new film produced by NBA legend LeBron James looks at a Native American high school team's attempts to rebound from a star player's tragic death. Sydney Freeland, who directed the Marvel series Echo, directed this film and co-wrote it with Sterling Harjo of Reservation Dogs fame. The drama stars Cody Lightning, Dallas Goldtooth, and Amber Midthunder, among others. Resball comes to Netflix September 27th. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull from KLCC in Eugene, Oregon.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, August 8th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov, David Rosenberg, Eric Tegedoff, Suzanne Potter, Mark Moran, and Eric Galatis. The producers Annette Newell and our engineers Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice.